This is the Human Beat, and we are talking with Brian Mahoney, the Clatsop County Department of Health Director, and with Stephen Blakesley, who's the Health Promotion Specialist for the Clatsop County Health Department. And Brian, if I may start with you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and what you did before you came here?
Sure, Roger. Thank you very much for coming over and asking about the Clatsop County Department of Public Health. My background is in public health for about 30 years. I went to Portland State and got a degree in health education and then went off into the Peace Corps where I could actually apply some of that type of skill and learned a lot. Came back and started working for the state of Oregon in environmental health. I was a trainee. And then about 6 months of that, CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, was hiring. And that was during the early days of the HIV epidemic. And I was brought into the Sexually Transmitted Disease Investigation Unit, which also included HIV. So I started my career with CDC at that time.
Was this in Atlanta, sort of the center of that?
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are in Atlanta, except that they hire people to work all over the country. So I left Oregon, and I was actually paid by CDC to work in Long Beach, California, out of the Long Beach Health Department and out of the Anaheim, Orange County Health Department as well. Mm-hmm. So that I kind of cut my teeth there in that, and then transferred to Philadelphia for a couple of years, worked inner city clinics, public health clinics there. And then went to Atlanta with CDC, where there was always something going on, and I never really had to change my job title, which was public health advisor, because the work that I did took me in so many different directions. Mm-hmm. So besides STD in the field and in the clinic, I began doing training and creating curriculum for HIV prevention counseling, STD videos, and supporting training centers around the country through funding out of our office. Then I was seconded to the WHO, the World Health Organization, through the immunization program at CDC. So I worked in polio eradication. I was a technical officer in Geneva and worked with the regions around the world on all of their logistics and finance, trying to bring polio vaccine to 500 million children around the world every year. And that work is still going on, and it's down to only two countries in the world right now where wild polio virus is still affecting the population, which is Pakistan and Afghanistan. Then the things started changing, and public health started getting online. We started getting computers and internet and all of that stuff in the early or in the 90s sometime. And I started working for the Health Alert Network, which was something that we created because the opportunity with the internet came through. How can we get public health information to the vast corners of the country in a timely manner where people can get the same information, can get training, can get communication, can share documents? And so that was a program that I helped put into place, as well as a project officer, being a project officer. Actually getting out and people in the field pulling wires into the health department. Mm-hmm. So that was something great. And then after the September 11th, besides the towers going down, there were anthrax cases immediately thereafter. Right. Somebody had put anthrax through the mail. So we were responsible for responding to that. The Health Alert Network and the nascent bioterrorism preparedness and response program at CDC was just taking off at that time. As a result, Congress put close to $1 billion in a supplemental bill, which was for public health emergency preparedness. And all that money went out to the states at one time, and there were no programs to absorb it. So they needed staff, and it was an opportunity for me to come back to Oregon. Mm-hmm. And so I was hired in a preparedness program for the state of Oregon. And from there, I was working with the state of Oregon preparedness program for 15 years. And a couple of years ago, this came along. So this helped me sort of solidify a lot of those other programs, because here we have preparedness, here we have immunizations, here we have STD programs. So we can just get in and start talking about what public health does.
Stephen, can you first fill us in on your comings and goings before coming here?
Sure. Yeah, I've been working in public health for a little over 5 years now. And previous to that, I was doing high-tech marketing for about 7 years. And then previous to that, my background is actually in education. So I get to combine the various careers that I've had. And what really brought me into public health was a conversation I was having one night talking about marketing and strategic planning and strategic thinking, and learning how when we're talking about changing how people live their lives, trying to get people to be healthier, we're really talking about changing culture. And so how do you do that? You need to slow down, look strategically at the way that changes are made on many, many different levels, and it becomes very complicated very quickly. And that really attracted me to public health, because it's an incredibly challenging and difficult problem. And so, so for the last 5 years, I've been working on that, trying to get everybody a little bit healthier.
Well, when we chatted just a few moments ago, you sort of raised the question of what is public health at all. Would you like to respond to your own question?
Well, I guess it goes back to actually when I was interviewing for this position, and the first question was, what is public health? And I think I gave a horrible answer at the time. I don't think I really knew. But I think the best answer is that for people to think about it is that it's compared to when you and I go to a doctor that is treating the individual. Mm-hmm. That's medicine, that's health, that's ideas for that individual to have a healthier life. And in public health, it's about how do you do it for the population, for the whole community to live better.
Yeah, the previous health director here, Margo Lalich, would say that public health touches everybody every day. Mm-hmm. So we have a myriad program here. For instance, environmental health goes to air, to water, to related areas like the food that we eat, the restaurants that they're prepared in. Communicable diseases, people weren't immunized, there would be a lot more communicable diseases around, and so that's touching people every day, or preventing people from being ill.
Well, since you've stopped on that for a moment, let me ask you about it. There is a subset in our culture now, mm-hmm, that is opposed to vaccination. And I'm just curious, with your background in vaccination, what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I think it's a vocal minority. Mm-hmm. I believe, for the most part, the rates in Oregon and the rates around the United States are fairly high, and the herd immunity that creates prevents many people who otherwise would be unable to be protected, people who can't take their immunizations because of other personal health issues, they can't receive it. So that herd immunity helps protect them. There is another group of people that choose not to, and there are those that are sort of on the fence. So there are always going to be those people who decide not to for whatever reason, and those people who need a little extra explanation, a little extra help in understanding what the risks are and what the advantages are.
Well, I'm old enough to have had friends who have had polio and seen the results of that, and seen what happened when the polio vaccine came out and what a change it made in everything. I mean, you could go to swimming pools without fear. You could do all kinds of things without fear that were fearful before. I think people of my generation are probably pretty convinced that vaccination is a good thing, and I think some of the folks who may not be sure about it are generally younger and never experienced any of the things that happened before.
Mm-hmm. I agree. There are people who have access to alternate information, and for whatever reason are choosing to lean that direction. And it's not backed up by the science.
Mm-hmm.
The science proves that vaccine saves life.
Well, I interrupted you as you were talking about some of the many programs the health department has, and mm-hmm, I think that for a lot of people, I think, who live in Clatsop County, we know that there's a health department, a county health department, but unless we've had personal contact, we have only a vague idea mm-hmm. of what it does. So I appreciate you kind of filling us in a little bit on that. So what are some of the other programs?
We have a Women, Infants, and Children's program, which is a supplemental nutrition and education clinic. We have several women here that probably have 60 years of experience among them, and it's an amazing support for the community. It's federally funded, but we work out of the health department in Astoria and also go to Seaside a couple times a month, I believe, to assist people getting WIC vouchers and getting education, weighing their babies and seeing how their nutritional status is. We have a nutritionist who sets appointments once a month so that people can come in and actually have a sit down with, how can I now use this food substance that I don't know how to cook with, I don't know how to give it to my family, I don't know if they'll eat it, like what can I do with it now? So there is some of that. The WIC program has also partnered with the North Coast Food Web and with the farmers markets so that during the summertime when the food is really coming in hot and heavy, there are vouchers that have been matched so that local funding, local support and donations actually match so that for, say, a $5 voucher or $10 voucher, you can actually get twice as much mm-hmm. for that. And it's good, local, nutritious food.
Is there a way that the public health department benefits people in the county who actually never directly come to your door?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and a good example of that, when you came to this property here, all this entire property is tobacco and smoke free. Mm-hmm. And so by making the properties tobacco and smoke free, we're protecting everybody from secondhand smoke. Recently, the city of Astoria passed a similar policy. And we help with that. So those are two examples of where we work in the background, we pass policies, and we do things to our environment through policy that makes it healthier for everyone.
So it's an education function where you spread sort of healthy habits through education.
Well, that too. One of them would be just the function of we need to educate people that it's the tobacco and smoke-free campus. Mm-hmm. So first we pass the policy, then we need to educate people that it's a tobacco and smoke-free campus. The other piece of that education would be everybody understanding the impact or the bad ill effects of tobacco, both smoking and the secondhand smoke, which is another type of education, which is more direct. But mm-hmm. in terms of getting impacting everyone without them necessarily being aware of it, the policy was the first thing that came to my mind.
In public health, there's sort of a model where if you want to treat somebody, keep them well, or treat an illness, then there's a lot of one-on-one, both physical, clinical therapy, or education. That's really intensive. And we don't have enough people to go around individuals and do this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So the further away from that you go and changing things like behavior and policy, you start to reach many, many more people. So that with, for instance, seatbelts in automobiles was a public health initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And once the policy, once the laws started to change for that, we started protecting many, many, many more people. So it comes across as a culturally wide aspect of day-to-day living.
I think I'm recalling that I guess it's Kaiser has sort of adopted that philosophy that it will be much less expensive in the long run and people will be better off if they focus much more on prevention than on treatment. And that's sort of in the same ballpark of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and there's the public health analogy, which is about, we talk about treating or addressing things upstream or upriver, and basically what that refers to is once somebody's reached a problem level with something and they're kind of in that river headed toward to going over the falls with the rocks below, we can pluck them out only so fast. It's more efficient to keep them from going into that river in the first place. Mm-hmm. You can follow that analogy. But another example couple examples of where we function in the background would be, I see you have a glass of water mm-hmm. in front of you right there, you assume that that water is safe to drink.
Right.
And so everybody gets to drink in Astoria and in the Clatsop County for the most part on municipal systems, water that's safe for them. We same thing when we go out to a restaurant. We assume that people are using good hygiene back there in the kitchen and we will not get sick from the food. So public health operates in the background all the time.
And how is it that, the health department actually interacts with the things you just mentioned, with the water and the food and so on?
So, well, with the food, Brian can talk more about this, but we have the environmental health, the restaurant inspection. So mm-hmm. on a regular basis, all the restaurants get inspected to make sure that they're following the proper procedures and practices.
And, yeah, and beyond that, we've also set up training for restaurateurs and also, say, food handling classes. So those are held several times a year by our staff, both in English and Spanish. As far as water goes, the municipal water system, say Astoria or Seaside, they follow sort of a little bit of a different way of ensuring that their water is treated. We use smaller systems. Our public health department is really actually responsible for smaller community-based water systems. They're public, but they're much smaller than municipals. So we'll go out to the horse camps and the RV parks and a few things like that and make sure that their well water or their surface water, however it's been obtained, is still following the logic behind keeping it safe and clean.
Mm-hmm. Well, recently, Clatsop County was selected for a program called Way to Wellville, and I guess one of only five areas in the country selected for that. Can you tell us what that is and what that does and what you'll be doing with that?
So Way to Wellville is really a challenge to five communities that were chosen, and we were able to demonstrate to the founders of HICCUP that Clatsop County had a lot of really good programs going already focused on health. We have strong collaborations and partnerships, and that really is the reason why we were chosen. We also have sponsorship from our coordinated care organization, which is the Columbia Pacific Coordinated Care Organization. And so through that organization, they've funded two full-time staff, one coordinator, and a communications lead, as well as they help us out with our website. We have a strategic leadership council where there are about, I think there are 12 of us on that council now, and we've selected different areas of focus that we're looking at to help boost the overall well-being of Clatsop County. Through the Way to Wellville, we are put in touch with investors and with different organizations to try different ideas and see if we can't move that needle of health. What we then hope to do in the next 5 years is we will look at where we've moved the needle the most, and we hope that we've created programs that then other communities across the country can look at and duplicate.
One of the issues was the lack of a place for people who needed the respite, needed to get just out of the way for a while with some specific care, mm-hmm. not in a hospital emergency department and not in a jail. Mm-hmm. So this is something that the county and county partners have been working towards, and we have seen some good movement in this direction, just looking at a facility and the staffing to do this.
If someone has a mental health issue and a physical health issue, that care is coordinated so the doctors are aware of perhaps the different prescriptions that are being written by the different people, and those they're communicating, they're talking, because they're seeing that person as a whole mm-hmm. person, not just that here's the mental health issue, go talk to that doctor, and on the separate side that's completely different, you know, this person has a bad knee and they need to go see an orthopedic person. It's about coordinating that care, helping them get to appointments when needed. And we feel that that approach will be very helpful, and it will also be cost saving.
They refer to it as a warm handoff. Mm-hmm. If you're in to see somebody for your diabetes and your checkup, and you've got some other behavioral health issues or something, if you can not only make that appointment but actually have that person walk them down to the clinic where that is, right down the hall, that closes that gap of, oh, well, once I'm out, I'm sort of forgotten, or I can't get back, or I have trouble getting there, or I don't remember what I'm supposed to do. A lot of that can be alleviated, and people get better care. And one of the things that happens then is that the outcome or the value of doing that pays for itself. So you've spent a little more money bringing people a little close together to provide that care, but it saves all the money in the long term of folks ending up in jail, ending up in the emergency department, or ending up not getting any care at all and causing much more destructive outcomes.
Mm-hmm. It's only in the last few decades, actually, that Oregon has sort of become aware of what can happen here because of the Cascadia subduction zone. And the 2011 earthquake and tsunami in Japan are sort of a preview for us of what we might experience. I think a lot of people who are listening to this program probably watched the recent OPB program on the Cascadia zone and what to expect. Does the health department have a role in that? I know, Brian, you have a big background in preparedness. How does that apply to the health department and those kinds of problems?
Well, what public health emergency preparedness was originally meant to do was to prepare public health departments for bioterrorism, for disease outbreaks, and for other public health threats and emergencies. And other public health threats and emergencies is where this actually falls under. What the funding has done for public health nationally and in Oregon and in the counties has put planning and exercises and training into our hands where we couldn't spell some of the acronyms mm-hmm. that emergency management usually used, like Incident Command System, ICS. Public health didn't know that, weren't actually part of that 15 years ago. But since then, we have built a relationship with emergency management in order to integrate the public health planning and response functions into emergency management. People think about emergency management and they think of bulldozers and helicopters and ambulances and tents and other things that come to the scene of a disaster. And that's all true. But what goes on within those venues where people have to be triaged for health concerns, whether somebody ran out of their flooding home and left their behavioral health medicine behind and ended up in a congregate center mm-hmm. where now they're not on their medication and everybody is sort of panicked, and now this person is just that much more at risk. Mm-hmm. So how do we plan for that situation? So that's what we're doing. We look at a lot of different scenarios and try and come up with at least a common set of goals so that we don't have to make a plan for every single scenario, but we have basic structure and understanding and experience in responding to general types of things. And then for what the specific things that we need, we are now tied into a system where we can make those requests for those types of resources. Emergency management is really a coordinating system. So if it's a bridge down or electricity out, they know who to call and who has those resources. If it comes to health, who's got those resources and how are those things brought in? So public health takes that lead and says, when you need health and medical equipment, manpower, information, you come through us, and we can reach out and bring those types of resources in. Public health department doesn't have those. But the system nationwide does, and we can help arrange those logistics.
Is there a kind of coordination going on amongst the hospitals and other health providers here to mm-hmm. try to have services available after an event like that?
Yeah, now, if we look at a Cascadia subduction 9.0, the earthquake, the tsunami, there's not really much that can stand up to that in terms of having a system that's going to respond locally. Mm-hmm. The system for the local response is probably going to not be able to do so well. What we do right now, though, is plan for those things that we can tackle ourselves. So we do have relations with the hospitals and the hospital systems and public health, so we can tie those medical health and medical things, needs and logistics together. When it comes to something that is super overwhelming, cataclysmic, I mean, you can come up with all kinds of other descriptors for it, but at that point, we have to ensure that people locally have thought about what they need to do to take care of themselves for the amount of time that it's going to take for those outside resources, not locally,
right,
but outside resources to come in, set up a system in order to bring that kind of relief to us. So we talk about sanitation in the backyard, basically. Mm-hmm. So a pit latrine, basically. Have you ever tried to think about digging one yourself? What do you do with the sanitation? How do you make sure that you have drinking water? Do you have tarps or tents or buckets that you could collect rainwater in? Mm-hmm. Do you have blankets and jackets and waterproof clothing that will keep you warm enough and dry enough outdoors when the buildings have fallen, so that you can actually survive in that type of environment? Because, you know, several months out of the year here, it actually gets rainy and chilly, and, you know, and to be out.
Not lately, but we're hoping again.
Yeah, we are pretty soon. But it's that type of thing. We have to think about that immediate response.
Right.
And instead of waiting for somebody to come, we want to make sure that people understand that there are some steps and preparedness that they can do themselves. There are all kinds of resource sheets, how to prepare, how to turn the gas off in the house, how to prepare canned stockpiles and food. Some people don't have that. Right. They don't have the resources to do that. So what can be done for those folks? So it's going to be neighbors assisting neighbors, and we can actually get neighbors together to start planning together. There's a program that's been used locally in a few places called Map Your Neighborhood. So there's a local, somebody volunteers from the local neighborhood to be sort of the instigator of this, brings people together, and you start talking about who has tools, who has knowledge about how to turn gas off, who has experience babysitting, dealing with kids or the elderly, while other people are going around checking on folks, who has first aid. So people in the neighborhoods, you can get together and share what your experience, knowledge, and capabilities are, so that you know when the lights go out and the roads get blocked, who in your neighborhood is able to help with whatever problems are going on.
Well, this is the Human Beat, and we've been talking about public health, and more specifically, the Clatsop County Department of Public Health, with Brian Mahoney, who is the director of that department, and Stephen Blakesley, who is the health promotion specialist. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roger.